Parsha Vayetze. Okay? Now, Parsha Vayetze takes 20 years. It's the adventures of Yaakov in Chutz Laretz. Yaakov in Lavan's house. Now, the truth is, there's really 14 missing years. Because we know how old Yaakov is when he leaves Eretz Yisrael and makes his way to Esau. He's 63 years old. We know that he works to get married to Rachel for 7 years, is tricked into working another 7 years. So at this point, after 14 years, he is 77. In that 14th year, right then, Yosef is born, and that's when he is ready to go back to Eretz Yisrael. We know when Yaakov comes down to Egypt that Yosef is 39 years old. He was 30 years old when he became the viceroy in Egypt. It was 7 years of plenty, 2 years of famine, making Yosef 39. 39 and 77. Okay, all you math geniuses. What is that? Yes, 116. I don't want to embarrass you. 116. And yet, when Yaakov comes, Paro asks him, how old are you? And he says, 130. So either we're bad at math, or there's 14 missing years. So Chazal say, before Yaakov even went down to Lavan, he first spent 14 years in yeshiva. Oh, some guys are Shana Bet, Shana Gimel. No one's Shana Yedalit. Yaakov spent 14 years in yeshiva. What was the name of his yeshiva? Shem Ve'Ever. So Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky has a beautiful idea and why Yaakov first went to yeshiva Shem Ve'Ever. Yaakov grew up in the house of Yitzchak and Rivka. Yaakov knew how to deal with tzaddikim, but now he's being sent to the Ramai, to the deceitful person, Lavan. And Rivka warned him, Lavan is not like what you're used to. So he went to learn Torah from people who had experience not giving into the peer pressure of their evil society. Shame lived during the period of the Mabul. And he was literally able to keep his head above water. Everyone around him, they were drowning in sin. Aver lived at the period of the Dor HaFlaga, Tower of Babel. And he also did not give in to the temptation of rebellion. I thought I was going to wait for you, but I gave up on it. Give in to the temptation of rebellion against God, and he maintained his integrity. So therefore, Yaakov said, I need to learn the type of Torah that can keep me from in the quote-unquote real world that you guys talk about all the time. Right? I have to be able to stay from in the real world. And the real world, that's the world of Lavans, the cheats. How do I maintain my integrity? How do I maintain my morality? So he went and he studied by Shem Ve'Ever for 14 years before he went to Lavan. Yes, sir.
Why so many years? Did he know that he was going to actually live with Lavan for 14 years?
No idea.
Every year?
No idea. Maybe every year, you know, his rabbi convinced him, come back another year, call your parents, ask him to get permission. Yitzhak and Rivka said, sure, go for it. You know, it's possible. Not sure if that's what happened, but it's possible.
Yeah,
then you have to go to YU, you have to go to Hask in the summer. Everyone knows. Okay. Back to Yaakov. He makes his way to Haran. On his way to Haran, Haran is sort of like modern day Turkey. He stops for the night and has a dream. He has a dream of angels going up and down a ladder with the top in Shemayim. I would assume it means it was one of those ladders that have like two legs that look like, you know, a triangle. So you have angels going up on one side, you have angels going down on the other side. All the pictures that I always see, it's like one thing, and it must be a very wide ladder, the angels going up and down. But it makes more sense to think that there's a, you know, a triangular type of ladder, and like they were going up one side, going down the other side, with the top up in Shemayim. And he has Nevuah, that God will be with him and protect him in his journey, and he'll return to Eretz Yisrael. Okay, very nice. He wakes up and realizes that where he had this dream was a holy place. And he calls it, and you know what he called it?
Where were you?
Beit El, the house of God. according to Chazal, where was that place that Yaakov dreamt? Yeah, right over there. You know, on Har Moriah, the Holy of Holies. He said it right across from the Tivariyeh. Okay?
Isn't there a place in Israel called Beit El? I remember.
There is. There is. But this is what he called Makom HaMikdash Beit El, the house of God. Yes, sir.
On his way to Haran.
On his way to Haran. Right? He starts in Beersheba in the south. He has to go north to Turkey. He stops off in Yerushalayim, and he has this dream. Yes?
Why does someone have to say Beit Kel?
That's the name. I haven't heard anyone from enough to say Beit Kel. Don't know. I'm certainly not there. I don't even want to be called Rav, you know? I know Rav Shragi told me my guys were complaining. Anyway, Rav Soloveitchik said like this. Before he went to sleep, he wasn't cognizant of where he really was. But now he realizes this is a special place. It's sort of like some guys, they look at the stones of the coat, don't they think it's stones? And then when they start to learn a little more, they realize what it really represents. He makes a nether that if God keeps his promise, he will be, for him, a God. Many of the first ones say, what? Making deals with God? You keep your promise, then you can be my God. Otherwise, no. Right? So some say, no, that's not what he meant. The Ramban says it was, let's say, who said, oh, some people say it was a tefillah. But the Ramban says, no, it was a t'nai. What was the t'nai? There's a Gemara in Ksuvis that says, kol adar b'chutz laretz ein lo eloka. Whoever lives in chutz laretz doesn't have a God. She says, you keep your promise, which is to return me back here, then you'll be my God. Because obviously when you're in chutz laretz, you don't have a God. So for those of you who want to have a God, okay, just put the two and two together. Anyway, Yaakov wanted a God. Baruch Hashem, he came back. You guys now have a God. It's very cool. Hopefully you'll have one for the rest of your life. Now, he then says, Dovi's going to have one for the rest of his life. We're proud of Dovi. He then says he will give Maaser to Hashem as well. Okay, when we get to it later, there are those who say all the different gifts that he sends to Esav is weird. It says this number of, you know, male sheep and female sheep. There's actually the Maaser. He had, you know, 10 times the amount that he actually sent to Esav, because we see that he gave Maaser. Oh, must be the gifts that he gave to Esav, that was a Maaser. Okay. There is an opinion that says that. I don't recall right now who. Upon approaching Haran, he comes to a well, and he inquires about the family of Laman. This is where he was going. It wasn't like the Eved of Avraham, who was looking for a wife and then said, I was sent to your family. Here, he was actually sent to the family of Laman, and he asks, and he's told, oh, you're in luck. Rachel is coming right now with the sheep, daughter of Laban. He asked them, how come you always get sitting around doing nothing? And they told him they need all the shepherds to get here to lift this huge stone from the well. And only when everyone's here, then they could take the stone off and they'll be able to give water to their sheep. Yaakov didn't want Rachel to wait around, so all by himself, he picked up the stone and moved it. He sees Rachel, and he's so moved that he kisses her. Okay? Every year, where guys start learning Shnei Mikra Vecher Targum, they think this is a heter for them to go kissing people. So just so you should know, the Ibn Ezra points out, it doesn't say Yaakov Nashak et Rachel, which would mean he kissed her, but rather Lirachel. And therefore, the Ibn Ezra says, it's like an elderly man kissing a young girl on her forehead, which is exactly what the situation was. He was an elderly man kissing a young girl on her forehead. So before you start thinking of heterim for you with your girlfriends, okay, wait till you're 81 or whatever he was. Yeah, say 60, yeah, 77 when he was coming there. And then you can go kiss your cousin on her forehead. Okay? That's mutter. Okay? Give that heter for all of you. He cries. He tells her who he is, long lost cousin, and she runs and tells her dad. Okay. Laban runs to Yaakov, hugs him, kisses him, and welcomes him into his house. And Yaakov tells him about a situation. Why he's running, he has to get away, and he is giving a lodging. After a month, Laban suggests to Yaakov, why don't you start working for me and I could pay you? right? You can actually have some money of your own. And Yaakov agrees, but says, I know what I want for my payment. I want to marry your daughter, Rachel, and I'm willing to work 7 years to marry your daughter, Rachel. And the Torah tells us, because he loved her so much, the 7 years flew by. Because for him, this was like his payment. This was a way of showing his love. It wasn't just like counting down the days. This is a way of expressing his love. So he is more than happy to do this. And the years flew by, and he is excited to now go and marry Rachel. As we know, yes, sir?
Why is Rachel like so reluctant to do it? Like, she's just, all of a sudden, like, her cousin shows up out of nowhere and says, yeah, I want to marry her, and I work for...
We don't ask women what they want. We ask the father. She was a young girl, and the father married her off.
So even that's even weirder. He's an old man, she's a young girl. Wouldn't you want to marry somebody more...
First of all, he had a lot more years of his life. He outlived her by a lot. I mean, just the way it worked out. He outlived Rachel by many, many years. And at that time, I guess, that wasn't considered that old. He's going to father 13 kids, you know, at the age of 77. People aren't doing that today. So I guess things were a little bit different. Okay, just even you just take all the years and chop it in half. Yitzchak lived to 180, so make it like 90. Okay, so you chop it in half, 77. He's in his 30s. Okay, who's older? But like by our standards, it would be something like that. He certainly was like in his 30s physically. He's lifting stones that the shepherds can't. He's working for Lavan for, you know, turns out 20 years. Most people are not working to 97 out in the field. So, as I said, it was a little bit different than what we're used to. Now, at the wedding, Lavan switches, as we know, Leah for Rachel. The next morning, Yaakov protests to Lavan. And he responds, and according to many of the Mefarshim, this is a criticism of Yaakov. He says, around here, we don't give the younger before the firstborn. Right? Like, wink, wink, as opposed to you taking the bracha before your older brother. It's not the way we do things around here. But, make you a deal. If you work for another 7 years, you can have Rachel. Right? In fact, such a nice guy, I won't make you wait 7 years. Just wait till the Sheva Brachas are over between you and Leah. I'll give you Rachel, I trust you. After Sheva Brachas, give you Rachel, you work for me another 7 years. And the deal is done. Each one comes with their own Shivcha, maidservant, Bila for Rachel, Zilpa for Leah. And now these are the mothers of the Shvatim. Leah proceeds to have children right away and starts naming each one. She names Reuven and Shimon and Levi, and she explains the reasons. She is happy. She's hoping that by having these children, she'll win over the love of her husband, because it was clear to her, and the Pasuk says it, that Yaakov loved Rachel and comparatively hated Leah based on how much he loved Rachel, and her hope was having these children will win over the affection of Yaakov. Yehuda is born, and then she thanks HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, Gemara says the first person to say thank you was Leah, because Yehuda is like the word Hoda'a, to thank. Now, according to the Midrash, why does she only thank with Yehuda? Because the Imaot had Nevuah, and they knew that Yaakov was destined to have 12 sons. Since there were four potential mothers, each one should have three. Once she had her fourth, she said, wow, this is above and beyond what I deserve. So she thanked HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we are called Yehudim because that's the way we're supposed to approach life. We're supposed to be appreciative. We're supposed to realize that we don't really deserve anything. So whatever we have in our lives, we should be appreciative. Unfortunately, I once heard Rav Katz say, people complain, why is this bad thing happen to me? How come no one ever complains? I don't deserve all this good. Right? I mean, we know ourselves. We don't deserve all the good. But we just take that as a given, only complain when bad things happen. So our attitude should be, let's appreciate everything we have. That's what we're called Yehudim. Even though we could be from Yehuda, from Binyamin, from Levi, possibly from mixture of the 10 lost tribes, We're all called Yehudim because that is the attitude we should have towards our life. Rachel is watching her sister produce babies like a Coca-Cola machine, and it's driving her crazy. And she complains to Yaakov, and she says, "Give me children, or I'd rather be dead." Right? This is just an interesting thing and a difficult thing. We have to realize that, and we have to be sensitive. Ravina told me that one of his children didn't have kids for many years, and they never can go to family gatherings for a long period of time. Just watching all the little nephews and nieces running around, just it drove them crazy. I heard one person speaking yesterday, and he said someone confided in him. He has no children. The hardest holiday of the year is Simchas Torah. He was dancing around with their kids on their shoulders, and he doesn't have any kids to put on his shoulders. Right? So we have to be sensitive to this. And it seems like Yaakov was not. He just throws it back in her face. What am I, God? Like, you know, what are you complaining to me? I'm not, it's clearly not my problem. I'm having kids. Why are you complaining to me? Seems very insensitive from his part. The Ramban says, he's telling her, this is not magic. It's not like, oh, well, you know, if you daven or bring a korban, then obviously I'll have a kid. It doesn't work like that. And that was, according to the Ramban, his message. It reminds me, every time I think of this Ramban, of Racheli Frankel. Racheli Frankel, Bezrat Hashem, will have the schlis to hear from her. She is the mother of one of the three boys that were kidnapped. Now it's probably, I don't know, how many years ago?
2014.
Well, that is 2014?
I think so.
Okay, so it was a while ago. And someone said to her, she was at the Kotel, and someone said to her, "We're davening for you. We're davening for the boys." And she thanked them, and she says, "I just want you to know that if it doesn't end well, it doesn't mean that your tefillot weren't answered." But she said, "Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't work for us. It doesn't work for me. Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't work for us. We can ask for things, but we don't necessarily know God's plan." And this is the Ramban. You can daven. Doesn't mean just because you daven, you're going to get it. If that was true, we wouldn't need to daven to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. You can get to one of his clerks. Just say, "Okay, here's the money. Okay, here's your merchandise." It doesn't work like that. Kadosh Baruch Hu has his, you know, calculations, and we don't understand them. This is the first answer. This is the Ramban's answer. I mean, I didn't write down now in my notes, but I'll tell you one more that I know. I don't remember now who said it. There's a story about a person that once came to a Hasidic Rebbe and asked him for children. It was a couple. Came to, they said, "We're childless. You know, Rebbe, give us a bracha." And he said, "There's nothing I can do." I said, "What?" And I said, "Go to you." "There's nothing I can do. I'm sorry." And they left dejected. And after about 5-10 minutes, he sent his attendant, "Go find that couple and bring them back." And he brought them back. And when they came back, he said, "What did you do when you left my home?" They said, they turned to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and said, "We have nowhere else to go." They cried to Hashem. He goes, "Thank you." That's what he wanted. So according to that opinion, or that story at least, maybe that's what Yaakov was trying to get Rachel to do. "Don't just go to me. Take matters into your own hands." We know the Chana certainly does that in the beginning of Sefer Shmuel. So whether or not that's pshat, I don't know. When I heard that story, I thought that might fit in here. Anyway, continuing. The result was that Rachel does take matters into her own hands, but not by davening, giving her maidservant to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Basically, Bila would be her surrogate mother to a certain extent, because she says, "I'll build a family through her. You impregnate her, and it'll be like my adopted kid. I'll raise this kid. Bila's my maidservant." This is sort of what she had in mind. And Rachel named the kids. Don and Naftali, and I'm pretty sure it's Rachel that names the kids. I might be wrong on this. Maybe it was Yaakov, but it certainly wasn't Bila. And then Zilpah is given by Leah, and Zilpah bears two other children, Gad and Asher. Now we have a weird story. Okay, God, I'm sorry, Reuven, who's all of about 5-6 years old, comes home with flowers for his mom. Dudaim. And Rachel sees them. And Rachel says, whoa, those are so nice, can I have them? And Leah says, if I get to have Yaakov for the night. It was, I guess it was a rotation where Yaakov slept. It was Rachel's night. And Leah said, trade you my Dudaim for Yaakov. And Rachel says, deal. And Leah goes out and says, you know, Rachel and I made this, we made this, like, you know, agreement. You're coming to my tent. Great. Rav Yonatan Grossman points out something that, once he said it to me, it was just so obvious, but I upset myself, I didn't notice it before. He said, this is so reminiscent of Esav selling his Bechorah to Yaakov. What happens? Yaakov gives soup, and what does he get back? A bracha, something much better. Leah gives flowers, what does she get? Something much better. Yaakov. If this is true, the same way that the Torah tells us that Esav disrespected the Bechorah, well then guess what? Rachel disrespected Yaakov. And Bereishis Rabbah, I'll tell you the source for people who want to look it up. Ayin Bet Gimel says she got the flowers and she lost two sons. So Midrash says. Midrash says, how many sons was Leah supposed to have? Four. Rachel, four. How many of the maidservants together? Four. That was the plan. What's the proof? After Leah had Reuben, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, it says Leah stopped having kids. What do you mean stop? She was knocking out, she ends up having altogether 7 kids in 6 years. So it wasn't like she went a long time without having kids. When it says stopped, it meant in God's plan, there was going to be no more kids. But once Rachel traded the flowers, she was Zochel, Leah was, to have 2 more kids. She had really stopped. And that's why the proof is Yisachar and Zvulun were born, it says, to Yaakov. Up until now, saying the mothers. It says they were born to Yaakov. Just like with the Shvachot, they were Yaakov's kids. Not Rachel's, not Leah's, they were Yaakov's kids. Because they really were supposed to be, wasn't part of the original plan. Yes, Eliyahu. Why, what do you mean?
Why not? For all the kids.
Again, this nevuah that there were going to be 12 kids all together, so 4 is supposed to be for Leah, 4 for Rachel, and we already had 4 kids. We already have all the kids. We're missing now 4 more kids. Okay? Reuben, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvulun, and Dan, Naphtali. I'm sorry, not Yisachar, Zvulun. Dan, Naphtali, Gad, Asher. They're all born. 4 more sons are supposed to be born. They were all supposed to be to Rachel. But now, Yisachar and Zvulun are born to Leah, based on this Midrash, and it fits in with this idea that she disrespected Yaakov the way Esav disrespected the Bechorah. You look at the words, and they're very similar. And give me the soup. I'll trade you. Disrespecting. I don't know. I never thought of it. I heard that. Wow, that's very interesting. And especially you have a Midrash to back it up. Very interesting. Yes.
It was possible that Rachel preferred flowers to Yaakov.
Like, yeah.
Maybe these flowers, there was something.
So there are some people that want to say that she did her ishtadlut, that this was supposed to be something that would help her become pregnant.
Ah, yeah.
Okay. People want this because otherwise,
but either way, it's also like if you want to have a child, it's not flowers that will make you pregnant.
Right. It's like the people that say Pita Maktorat instead of getting a job and assume somehow by saying Pita Maktorat they can have money deposited in their bank account. I agree with you. If you didn't get that, that's fine.
No, yeah,
but okay. But over here, it's seemingly, certainly the Midrash is saying Rachel acted improperly. How do you just trade your husband? I look at, yeah, take him. I don't need him. Sounds like Rodney Dangerfield routine. Take my wife, please. You know, like whatever. Like what is that? According to the Midrash, she blew it big time. Yes, Solomon.
I have a
according to the article of commentary, apart from saying, on this section, apart from saying we don't know what Dudaim are, it then says that the Crusaders comment on how every word in this shows how great the characters involved are and how... What's that all about? Where's that?
I don't have to defend the article of commentary. I certainly didn't see it, so I don't know. But I'm saying right now, I'm telling you a different idea. I share with you the ideas that I find really interesting. Certainly when it's not like... I'm used to like standard stuff. When I see something new, I say, wow, this is so cool. So when I heard that shir, and then he backed it up with a midrash. Whoa, that's pretty cool. Right? The wording was good enough. I would have told it to you if I didn't have the midrash. I thought just the wording was cool, which I didn't see. But then when he backed up with the midrash, that was pretty amazing. Now, yeah.
Weren't those the flowers that Reuven stole back and put away his tent?
Now you're quoting things that I don't know. Certainly not in the Pesukim. I don't know. After Yisachar and Zvulun are born, Rachel finally has a child. And what does she call him? She calls him, we want another one, just like the other one. That's basically what the name is. Yosef, give me another one. That's the name of the kid. That's the name of her kid. Okay, Yosef, we want another one, just like the other one is the name of this kid. In short, they nicknamed him Yosef. Now, after 7 years of marriage, 4 wives, 11 sons, 1 daughter, Yaakov is ready to go back. His contract's over. He worked his required 14 years. He tells Laban, I'm ready to go home. And in this parasha, this very long parasha by Yetzei, this is the exact midway point in the parasha. And it should really end. But, crazy thing that makes no sense to me. Laban says to him, I suggest that you stay on and work a little bit longer so you have some money. And Yaakov says, okay. And Yaakov stays in Chutz La'aretz. At this point, open-ended. Right? It turns out to be 6 years, but they never set an amount. Said, I'll work this amount of time and I'll give you this big gift, sort of like with an Eved Ivri. Oh, I give a parting gift at the end of your term that can't work more than 6 years. It turned out to be six, but it wasn't like that. It was open-ended. But what happened because of this? He needed to be the 14 years. But now he agrees to a business proposition. Stays on indefinitely. This unaccountable delay leads to Yaakov making lots of money, arousing lots of jealousy from Laban. Yaakov feeling uncomfortable with the jealousy, leaving in the middle of the night, running away from Laban. Laban pursuing Yaakov. Yaakov cursing the taker of Laban's trafim and causes the death of his beloved Rachel, who he came there in the first place to work for, spent 14 years working for. And now, because of all of this, she dies young. All because of what? Money that he wanted to make. I heard this idea in the name of Rabbi Joseph Lookstein. Rabbi Joseph Lookstein was the founder of Ramaz. Okay, he went there, right? They have pictures of him up there? Okay, so I'm not sure if he said this on his own or this was a well-known idea. Because I then, afterwards, had heard it in the name of many other people. It was just a well-known idea. But here's the idea. I'm just saying in the name of Rabbi Joseph. That's the first time I heard it quoted in his name. Yaakov Avinu has 2 dreams. And those are significant. Because what happens? An angel comes and says, it's time for you to get out of here. I see what Laban has done to you. And our question is, what do you mean I don't see what Laban has done to you? It says, we all know, it's a Rashi, it's made into a song, Im Lavan Garti Vitari Mitzvah Shamarti. Right? I live with Lavan, I kept all the mitzvahs, I'm from, what do you mean Lavan done to me? So Rabbi Lookstein said, I see your dreams, I see your aspirations, I see what has become of you. Oh yeah, you kept mitzvahs, but before you went to Lavan's house, you know what you dreamt of? Angels. And now you know what you're dreaming of? How to get speckled and spotted sheep. Because that's what we see. We have a dream that tells him, after they make an agreement, says, okay, Yaakov, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to remove all the speckled and spotted sheep, and then all the speckled and spotted sheep that are born to you you know, to your flock, you can keep. And what happens? Based on his dream, he starts sticking all these streaked and spotted sticks near the water where the cattle mate. And based on, this is also, people say, based on what you're thinking of when you're having relations will affect your child. So he does this hishtalus, and he now starts getting all this speckled and spotted cattle. So what are his dreams about now? How to make money. And that's what the angel said. I see what loving has done to you. You used to be a guy with spiritual aspirations, and now you're a person with only material aspirations. It's time to get out of here. God appears to him. I could say matan about Jews and the chutzlars staying there for money, but I'm not going to say that, you know, because we sort of said that about Lot and Stone, so there's no need to repeat it here. Anyway, God appears to him and says it's time to go home. Go to Beit El, the home of God. Go to the religion that you have in Eretz Yisrael. That is your home. And not for the money in chutzlars. Go to Eretz Yisrael. He asks his wives, are you guys game? And they agree. They leave. Lavan finds out and starts to catch up to him. On day 7, he catches up to them. And then after being told by God, he says, God told me not to speak tov or ra, not to speak good or evil. He starts to complain. Why'd you run away? Why'd you steal my gods? And Yaakov says, yeah, you think I stole your gods? Go search the house, and may the taker of your gods, if anyone took it, drop dead. As we said, not knowing that his beloved wife took the trephim. When Laban doesn't find them, Yaakov gives a long, impassioned speech, probably the longest speech that we have in the Torah, about his loyalty to Laban, his mistreatment by Laban, and continued loyalty, even though there was such mistreatment. Laban says, I never hurt them. Why would you think I would hurt my family? They're my family. These are my children. These are my grandchildren. I wouldn't touch any of them. And they make a bris. They build a monument. Laban calls it Yagar Saaduta. Yaakov calls it Gal-Ed. Laban swears by the God of Avraham and Nahor. And God and Yitzchak, sorry, Yaakov swears by the God of Pachad Yitzchak. What's the difference? Laban tries to show how we're alike. I'm from Nahor, you're from Avram, but they were brothers, so we're cousins, one big happy family. And he built a monument to unite. Yaakov's building a wall to separate. I'm not with you. I'm just with Yitzchak. I'm not even going back to Avram, who you could say is your, like, you know, great uncle. I'm just going with Yitzchak. Okay? He's separating. What do you want to say?
Yeah, but isn't Rachel, yeah, but his mother is his.
Right, so, but that, they're, so they're only talking about the men right now. Yaniv, you want to say something? The Netziv suggests a very interesting thing. Well, this will finish. Golas Mitzrayim that we had could have been Golas Aram. We didn't have to spend 210 years as slaves under Paro, because what was said at the Brit Ben Avatarim? Geri Yezarecha Be'eretz Olam. Your Zerah, your seed, Yaakov fits the bill, will be foreigners in a strange land. And Yaakov was. He was by Laban. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved us from staying by Laban. He left. And just to realize the similarities, there was servitude in both. Each time we left with great wealth from Mitzrayim, and when Yaakov left Laban. Both Paro and Laban, after realizing that the Jew or Jews / left, pursue them and catch up to them on day 7. They find out on day 3, they catch up on day 7. Both in Parshat Bishalach with Paro and over here. So what was so cruel about Laban that Baruch Hashem, we didn't have Golus Aram, but instead had Golus Mitzrayim? We say it in the Haggadah every year. Paro just wanted to kill the boys. Laban wanted everyone. What did he say? Your sons are my sons. Your daughters are my daughters. God said, don't speak good or bad. Why? Because good can be worse. Because more Jews have been lost through the centuries to assimilation than to anti-Semitism. And had we stayed with Lavan, we could have just totally assimilated and the Jewish people would have been forgotten. So therefore, out of Rachamim, says in Itziv, Kadosh Baruch Hu says, no, we're not going to have Golas Lavan, because that could be the end of us. Instead, we had Golas Mitzrayim. We suffered, but we survived. Interesting take on things. Okay, questions? Yeah.
I don't know
if we know that he knew where he was.
I mean, like, Yaakov's probably famous there, no?
I don't know. He's just working in his plantation many, many, many miles away.
But once he leaves, Esav confronts him.
Esa doesn't know where he is. That's why he ran away. Doesn't know where he is. Only when Yaakov comes back.
When he leaves the house, Esav confronts him.
When he gets back to Israel, that will be the next parsha.
Once he gets back to Israel.
Yeah. And there we'll also see, it's interesting, Yaakov no longer is like sneaking around. He sends a message and says, the message to Esav, I'm coming back. He no longer wants to be like the trickster. He like says, if it can be a confrontation, it's going to be a confrontation head on. Not going to just sneak in and maybe you won't notice. So that'll be the next parasha. He sends messages. I'm coming back. Okay? Questions? Comments? All right. Have a very good night.